From the land to Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of October 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net. We'll hear from Ben Brown, agricultural economist at the University of Missouri and with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. We'll talk about tomorrow's webinar hosted by the Illinois Soybean Association looking at MAHA, or the Make America Healthy Again movement, and speaking to the Trump administration or related issues. We'll hear NCBA's reaction to the weekend news that the president is hoping to import Argentine beef in order to lower the price of beef for consumers here in the United States. And we'll do all of that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $4.23 and a quarter. It was 0.75 cents higher. The March contract at $4.37, up a half. The May a quarter higher at $4.45 and a quarter. November beans at $10.31 and three quarters, 12.25 cents higher. January at $10.50, up 13 and a quarter. The March up 13 and a quarter at $10.64. Bean meal $4 higher. The bean oil up 18 cents, and hard red winter wheat in the December contract a penny and a half lower at $4.90. The soft red at $5.04 and three quarters, a penny higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at $2.43.65, up $1.82 and a half. Feeders were 97.5 cents higher, and lean hogs were down 30 cents. They settled at $82.07 and a half cents. Here to make sense of some of these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He's with AgMarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thanks for being with us today. I'd like to start with the soybeans, because there was a nice little rally there, and it managed to blow through the 50 and the 100 day in the Novembers, but did not manage to settle above the 200 day, just below it, in fact. What do we make of this marketplace?
Well, the social media or rhetoric over the weekend gave the complex some hope. There's some confidence that we're getting a trade deal or working on a trade deal with China for U.S. Soybeans. It's just, you know, going to take some time to get that accomplished, when, where, and so forth. But also, too, there was talk that we'd like to see China get back to buying as many beans from the U.S. as they did previously before all this kind of broke loose. So that gave the market hope. The market's been giving everybody hope and taking it away. So hopefully hope will continue to be there as we continue to climb the wall of worry. Also, too, on the commercial side of the picture, we've seen some grain agencies, buying agencies out of Asia start to probe around. I'm not quite for sure that there's been some business take place here, particularly when you look at the cash bids. We've seen basis improve quite a bit in through here. You know, the fear has been that we've had this onglut wall of grain coming at us, but with all the free DP offers and grain moving into commercial hands, the market is holding in there. Plus, too, we've seen some situations where there is some free DP to try to get some more grain to move. That being all said, with the firm basis and everything, some of these places that are buying grain, pushing to get grain, but yet they're shutting down early because they've got a lot of grain. So there's a lot of things going on in the countryside, but kind of feels like we're seeing harvest wrapped up and the soybean market caught in just a little bit of a vacuum here for a while, Todd.
Over the weekend, I made a couple of trips, went to Cleveland via Columbus through Dayton, and then came back through Cincinnati and Indianapolis. I also made a trip straight south on 57 to Farina, and that's south of Effingham. I would say that, you know, 100% of what has been out there in our area and that part of the world from here going south is mostly gone or near 100%. However, once you get into eastern Indiana and Ohio, there's a lot of corn left, not much soybeans. I In fact, I would think they're just getting a good start on the corn there. So still corn coming in. I don't know what you're hearing from Iowa and Minnesota and how far along they might be. Do you have any contacts that are there that are giving you some indications?
Yeah, it varies widely region to region. You know, some areas just like get the beans out. The beans are out. There's other areas that like to get the corn out and get the beans out later. But for the most part, to dial that in is still a work in progress due to the government shutdown. But most of the trade kind of feels, the trade estimate, the average trade guess for corn harvest is about 59% complete. An average trade guess for the bean harvest is about 74% complete. That's a little bit behind the five-year average. I think we're a little closer to the five-year average, which is 65% complete on corn and 81% complete on beans. Both the favorable weather forecast we're seeing in through here is just not going to be a big issue. Guys really not been in a big hurry here. Some guys have been in a hurry to get it out, but for the most part, the way this weather forecast is unfolding, it appears, there's still plenty of time and good standability to get the crop out. And for the most part, most of the crop's been finding a home in through here, whether it's creative storage ideas or just plain moving across the scale. So far, it's been so good. And that kind of spells with the technical picture turning positive and with the seasonal picture turning a little positive here, maybe we can try to recoup a little bit of our in charge there, Todd.
How much of it do you think you might be able to get back?
I think you can get a good chunk of it. Of all the 43 years I've been doing this, once a guy pays minimum storage or puts into DP, it's hard to get that grain shook loose, especially if you fill a bin. I've only seen maybe once or twice a guy's gone out and emptied that bin. So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of movement once it's stuck away until about Thanksgiving. After the first of the year, the commercial grain trade's trying to still spin the idea we've got a wall of grain coming at us after the first of the year. But between now and Thanksgiving, I think there's a sporting chance we can see some price stability going into that time window.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking time with us on this Monday.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, online at WILLAG.org. In today's agricultural news, President Trump's foreign policy moves with Argentina continue to irk U.S. farmers. First came the news. The Trump administration was attempting to support the Argentine peso that happened to coincide, too, with the sale of soybeans from the South American nation. And then over the weekend, Mr. Trump told reporters traveling with him on Air Force One that he intended to have the United States purchase Argentine beef to lower prices in this nation. Well, that did not settle well with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. It is concerned rewarding Argentina with expanded access to the U.S. market will harm America's farmers and ranchers, while also interfering with the free market. Colin Woodall is the CEO at NCBA. He says family farmers and ranchers have numerous concerns with importing more Argentinian beef to lower prices for consumers, noting the plan only creates chaos at a critical time of the year for American cattle producers while doing nothing to lower grocery store prices. NCBA reports Argentina has had an unbalanced trade relationship with the United States in the past 5 years. Argentina sold more than $801 million of beef into the U.S. By comparison, the U.S. has sold just over $7 million worth of American beef to Argentina. Argentina also has a history of foot and mouth disease, which, if brought to the United States, could decimate domestic livestock production. NCBA is calling on President Trump and members of Congress to let the market work, rather than intervening in ways they say does nothing but harm rural America. In related news, the Illinois Soybean Association is hosting a webinar tackling the Trump administration's MAHA or Make America Healthy Again agenda tomorrow. It includes ag policy experts from the University of Illinois and Washington, D.C. Maria Kalitsa-Danike says they'll explore MAHA and how it directly impacts farmers.
I think we're going to think about what farmers can expect, consumer responses to MAHA, sort of the political power of MAHA, what we expect moving forward, what changes we're seeing in the movement. So I think it'll be both sort of trying to understand where we are now and what folks can expect moving forward.
The webinar starts at 10 a.m. and is expected to run for an hour. The panelists will include the U of I ag economist, an industry representative, and a Washington, D.C.-based ag policy expert. Details are available from the Illinois Soybean Association. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Just a quick reminder to visit our website at willag.org, willag.org, where today you can sign up for the Farm Assets Conference and the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Have you ever wished that there was a podcast about the weather in your area? Right here in East Central Illinois? Guess what? There is. And Trent Ford, state climatologist at the University of Illinois, is a co-host. The podcast is called Weather Realness, and if you stay with us on our home station today at WILL AM 580, you'll hear it at 2:30. Hey, thanks, Trent, for being with us. This podcast will come up momentarily or soon enough here on our home station. Thanks for being with us today. Can you tell me about Weather Realness and your hopes for this program?
Yeah. Thanks, Todd, for having me on. This is it's a neat opportunity. You know, this was kind of the brainchild of WILL, and they pulled in a few folks, myself included, and a few folks from the Atmospheric Sciences Department, the Climate Department, here on campus at the U of I. And the goal was to just talk about talk about different topics related to weather and climate, and to bring in experts on these various topics. So I mean, and your listeners know, weather touches pretty much everything, and so flush with different topics and options to talk about. So we've covered things like fall recently, and of course there's ongoing drought in Illinois. So we talked about drought and what that means. We've talked about impacts of weather to cropland agriculture, and even brought in folks like Jonathan Coppice to talk about the policy implications of it. So, it's neat because we can talk about these issues that are very near and dear to folks around Central Illinois, but then also leveraging these kind of world-renowned experts that we have right in our backyard here at the U of I to talk about sort of the broader implications of these sorts of issues.
How often are you doing the program?
Right now it's coming out weekly. And it's an hour long program at the moment, coming out weekly. So we've had, I don't even know if it's something like 7 or 8 productions already. It's funny, we meet once a week and, we talk about, okay, what are we going to do this week? But then also like, oh, we have these kinds of ideas, for what we want to do. So, we want to do one about fire, for example, or as we get closer to the winter, forecasted winter weather, which of course is a big deal. We always like to talk about, Taylor Swift just released a new album. We want to talk about, weather and how, Taylor Swift has used that in her lyrics before. So all of these, very different ideas. I even try to plug an extreme football weather one where we could talk about things like the ice bowl or fog bowl. What was the warmest, what was the coldest kickoff ever at Memorial Stadium here, those kind of things. And so some of these are very serious. We did one related to flooding once when we had that flooding event in the Texas Hill Country, and some are a little bit more lighthearted, like for example talking about frost or the Taylor Swift topic, for example. So, but all are relevant to, again, what's going on in Central Illinois and hopefully make a good listen.
Indeed. That's Trent Ford. He is state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute, located right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and the co-host of the Weather Realness podcast. You can search it out in your favorite podcast applications or just look for it in Google. If you can stay with us for our second half hour on our home station today, you'll hear an episode of the Weather Realness podcast, this one focused on drought in Central Illinois. Brown, agricultural economist at the University of Missouri with FAPRI and Extension. That's the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there, now joins us to talk about soybeans. Let's really focus on soybeans today. You and I had a little discussion, and you'd like to start with NOPA. This is the National Oilseed Processors Association, which releases regular reports tracking soybean crush. Can you tell me what you've been watching?
Yeah, so they always release the month after. So here just in October, we got the month for September, which is nice because it gives them time to get the reporting in, make sure that everything's accurate. And the association crushed just under 198 million bushels, which we assume, at least through reports, that the association represents somewhere around 95% of all soybeans crushed here in the United States. So just under 200 million bushels in total. That was 11.6 million bushels above the average pre-report trade estimate and above all estimates. So pretty bullish number from a soybean crush standpoint. And this has been a trend. Like I feel like the last couple of years, we just keep talking about new monthly record totals. And certainly that was true again this year. I think to me, what was even more of a bullish support system to the soybean complex was that even when you take into account the extra bushels, so a little over 11.5 million more bushels crushed, the stocks number was just slightly higher for soybean oil stocks, and so that signals that we saw fairly good soybean oil consumption during the month of September. It did come down from August, which is typical. That's a typical thing, but certainly it represented a substantial year-over-year increase in soybean oil consumption in the month of September.
What happened to the bean meal supplies in the same period?
So NOPA stopped reporting soybean meal stocks. They used to report exports. So we have to apply, do an implied calculation. They're up, and that's been a trend. We've seen exports of soybean meal increase from the United States as we have more soybean meal to consume, and it's become a little bit cheaper, relative speaking, than some of the other feed grain products, but certainly, with these added crush, we've seen higher volumes of soybean meal.
Is the added crush just because of added capacity, and what's driving it?
Yeah, so we have seen additional capacity come online. A lot of these companies have been building and building crush capacity, and that's been coming on. I think more so, we've seen what we have being utilized at strong rates. Typically August and September are months where we see facilities shut down for maintenance cleaning because, they're waiting for the new crop soybeans, U.S. soybeans, to come online. Some of them took maintenance earlier in the year, just kind of due to timing and when product was flowing. We didn't have some policies, kind of figured out early in the year. And so, crush facilities were running at partial capacity that allowed some of them to take maintenance then and didn't have to take it in August and September. So that's, I think, part of this as well, is not only additional facilities and expanded crush capacity, but also just not taking as much maintenance during the August and September period as what we normally see.
Is it similar to the ethanol or biofuels boom that took place as we ramped up ethanol, or is it something different for these renewable diesel and biofuels areas altogether? Not including them, or just vegetable oil usage in general?
Well, there's a separate conversation for the uses of soybean oil. And that's where, they're taking the soybean oil and turning it into, renewable diesel in some ways, right? And we've also exported a lot of soybean oil outside the U.S. as well, or at least higher than where we had been the last previous years. And that number keeps moving up as the pace of exports of soybean oil continue to grow. It's not, we don't think that we're at capacity in terms of soybean or renewable diesel and biodiesel production. Those facilities could continue to expand and use more vegetable oil product, including soybean oil. But from a soybean crush facility standpoint, in terms of crushing, we do, we have seen this growth in crushing to produce more soybean oil and soybean meal. Part of that's driven by just the large quantities of soybeans we have available for domestic use.
Turn your attention to the export market, or maybe better said, the import market, and what we might know about how China has been importing soybeans, clearly not from the United States.
Yeah, so you know, official data from the USDA is suspended during the government shutdown. So we're using other sources, other countries' information in terms of what they're importing. China does have numbers from their Chinese Customs Bureau that historically have been relatively consistent with U.S. numbers. There's always this question of, you know, do we see a disconnect, or, you know, would China start reporting different numbers relative to the United States? So we just got the September import estimates from the Chinese Customs Bureau. It shows that China imported a September record 473 million bushels. They report on kilograms. I convert that to million bushels. So 473 million bushels, that's up from last September's total of 418 million bushels. What is that? A 54 million bushel increase year over year in terms of what they import. Of that total, 85% of that total came from Brazil, 0% came from the United States, and 15% from the rest of the world. The rest of, you know, that 15% was heavily dominated by Argentina. To give you a comparison, that compares from last year's distribution of 74% from Brazil, 15% from the United States, and 11% from the rest of the world, respectively. So, we haven't been selling product to China, and so as a result, it makes sense that they're not importing our product. If you don't have the sales, you can't have the imports, and that's certainly what's starting to play out here. It should be noted, this is the first month where they've imported zero U.S. soybeans since all the way back in 2018, 2019. So it's, you know, it's throughout all the uncertainties over the last couple of years, you know, they've still been importing U.S. soybeans, but no U.S. soybean imports during the month of September.
What are U.S. exports like at this time?
So total U.S. exports, and we just got, you know, an updated export shipment. So these are beans that have gotten on a boat and left the country. You know, I estimate that total soybean shipments for the current marketing year we're in right now are roughly 203 million bushels. If we look at what, you know, we need to have to be able to hit USDA's export total of just under 1.7 billion bushels, you know, we're about 56 million bushels below that target. And I expect that to continue as we move our way deeper into the fall, that deficit to continue to grow. And we did see, you know, quite a few shipments to non-Chinese countries non-China countries, which is expected, right? Like we'd expect to pick up some business in other places, but it's been kind of the same three or four players. Mexico, Egypt, Bangladesh, and Indonesia continue to show up as the top four or five destinations for U.S. Soybeans as it relates to physical shipments.
Ben Brown is an agricultural economist at the University of Missouri. Helped us to wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.